Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Fiction, science fiction, horror, fantasy, crime, LGBT, thriller.
You have now entered the House of Mystery with your hosts, Eric Shapiro, David North Martino, John Copenhaver, and Al Warren.
Heard on KCBQ 106.5 FM Los Angeles,
102.3 FM Riverside,
and 105.0 AM Palm Springs.
And at the interview part of the show, joining me is a returning guest. She's written another book. It's called End Game of the Most Dangerous Game, Golden State Killer. And Penn, thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
So, first of all, let's have a look at this book. So, you call it End Game of the Most Dangerous Game, Golden State Killer. So, kind of, where did you come up with that name?
Well, it seemed appropriate since he pled guilty finally on June 29th, and then was sentenced in August 21st. So it just seemed appropriate, and of course, since I think he's also the Zodiac, it just sort of seemed to fit.
Now, I noticed on the cover, too, it's like a big flame.
Right.
Something I didn't expect that from this. So where does that come from?
Well, it was interesting as I was trying to create what the cover would look like. You know, one thing is he's a pretty evil monster, so he'll probably burn in hell. That's one of the things that dawns on most people, because that's what everybody says, rotten hell. And so he probably will. And that was one of the first things that I thought about fire. But also fire is for about rage for me, the picture of fire, especially when it's burning hot like that. And he really was a very rageful person. And also he was an arsonist, which people haven't even gotten to that aspect of his crimes much, because he was so busy being a peeper, stalker, rapist, murderer, and so on. But arsonist was also on the list. And so that's why it sort of spoke to me, and that's how that happened. And of course, there's an evil face in the fire. So
but before we go into the arson, now you say he had a great rage. Do you know what the cause of his rage was? Was that ever figured out?
Well, you know, obviously everyone has speculation theories, etc. His parents were divorced in 1964. So I think that somewhere along the way, it was his own parents that created the trigger or the trauma that, you know, was to be sort of what caused him to act out. But I also think he was always different, and I think he always knew he wanted to be an outlaw or a criminal. So it was just the perfect storm of, you know, situations, the nature-nurture thing. But then, of course, later on, he had a girlfriend who dumped him, and that was another trigger. So anytime I think he had some issues in his life, you can usually track and see that there was a fire or there was a murder or there was something that happened based around an anniversary of something that occurred in his life. So now that we know who he is, you can see what he did pretty much as far as his triggers and where he went and what he was doing. So,
do you ever wonder what causes a person to trigger like that? Like, because we could all tell stories of my father was an alcoholic, terrible person to live with. I had a terrible young life in my life. So I could tell some pretty wicked stories. And I have no desire to go out and kill anybody or start a fire or do right. anything major, right? Like, I don't, you know, sure, there are memories and there will be things that can upset me or bring me back to times where I'm not happy or things like that. But so does it ever make you wonder what makes that person, like this guy here, all of a sudden flip and decide, well, I'm going to go kill?
Right. Well, I used to wonder that, actually, but I don't think I do anymore, because after being so totally involved in trying to figure out this guy's mindset and figure out serial killers in general, I mean, after the murders of people down south in the 1980s and 1979, different murders that happened, and the Smith murders in 1980, I thought, there's no way that this was random as far as like, or excuse me, this is no way it was a family or a business associate. It was random. And maybe it really wasn't random. Maybe D'Angelo targeted certain people who made him angry or he ran across in his life. But the thing is that I wanted to know why, what causes someone to be a serial killer, what causes this, you know, absolute acting out of such a serious nature. And so you try to come up with those answers and you try to study it and figure it out. And it's my opinion, of course, and everybody has one, is that he came that way to the planet, really. I think there are certain people that have chemical issues with their brain. They don't understand how to be appropriate. They don't understand empathy. They don't feel the same way. They pretend to feel, and they pretend to be part of our society. Which is what he did. He hid behind a family and work and different things. And so he had this other side to him, just like BTK did, you know, where he fantasized about breaking into people's houses and, you know, doing whatever he wanted. It was about power and control. And some people have an issue with that and an addiction to it. And that's kind of my field of expertise. And I think that serial killers, once they actually really do kill, are addicted to it. First, they maybe start out as peepers and stalkers and burglars, and then, you know, goes from there, rapists and so on. And this guy, he was great at flipping his MO any way he wanted to. So.
Yeah. So now let's talk about the fire. Now you talk about arsons. So when do you think his first quest to do an arson was? Like, when do you think he started that?
Well, I think a lot of times when you know, kids are young and they're teenage years and so on, they start killing animals or whatever they do. But that's also probably part of what they do as young people as well, if they're into fire. And a lot of them seem to be. But he in particular, there was a lot of times where there would be a murder and then fires would be in the area not too far away. Or that he would just light a fire if he felt like it in a particular area. Or there would be a burglary and a fire to cover up maybe the crime scene, I'm not sure. But there were a lot of arsons in different areas that he was, like in Tulare County, in Placerville, in Auburn, all the places that he was in. And, of course, when he first came to California, he was in the Rancho Cordova area. And so in Placerville, his sister lived in that area and so on. So if he was, you know, driving these rural roads, it wasn't that hard to light a fire and just keep on going. So there's a lot of unexplained arsons all over, especially the area that I'm familiar with, which was near Sacramento and Auburn areas.
Yeah, yeah. And so what do you think in particular he liked to burn? Or was it just random as far as his arson?
Well, you know, it depends on the persona we're talking about, but he a lot of times would, he's burned down a house. He's burned down quite a few houses, actually. There were times where he would burn out a car. And when, if you believe that he's Zodiac, of course, that happened. He picked up Kathleen Johns and burned out her car. There were times when he just randomly would set things on fire with or without people in them, buildings where there were, you would go in and say, well, gee, someone was murdered in here, or we suspect this person was murdered, and then a fire was set. So there were a lot of different crimes that happened that were unsolved, once again, all over the state of California, but in particular in Tulare County and Placer County and Sacramento areas, so, and probably anywhere he went.
So when you called him an addict, like when we stepped back there, you said he was an addict. So is he, do you believe, an addict to the killing itself and to the arson itself? So people get addicted to these sort of things,
right.
I guess we want to call
right.
Wow. So you're saying in essence, okay, so he's addicted to burning these houses or places and different buildings. So when does it stop, or can it?
I don't think that he could ever stop. That's one of the things I say in my book, is that he really was about power and control, but the reality of his behaviors is that he had no power or control over his own self. He had to do these behaviors. He absolutely was addicted to whatever the thrill was, whatever the adrenaline rushes were. You know, I think he was really addicted to it and couldn't stop even if he wanted to until someone stopped him. So, you know, he may have slowed down when he got older, but I know that he was probably still peeping and prowling, because there have been people who turned in different things that they thought they saw him on film. You know, people have security cameras and so on, still in the Citrus Heights area where he was living. So, you know, he may have slowed down. Certainly couldn't jump fences. Well, maybe. But he really couldn't stop, and he had to be stopped.
So you think he was still committing crimes even when he, you know, the Golden State Killer, kind of that idea got kind of out of the limelight, so to speak. It was no longer the thing people talked about, but he was still in Sacramento, let's say, and doing things.
I think he was all over the state. I think he had different places that he would go. After 1986, I think he was still very active. He was still a fairly young man. So for people to ever really consider that he stopped, or question, gee, why did he stop? Well, a lot of people don't believe he did. And I certainly know the impression I got from law enforcement when they were talking to somebody after the admitting him guilty back in June. Someone asked in the media or in the audience whether or not they thought he had done anything else, and the impression you get from the answer was that that was something they couldn't speak to, but I got the impression that they obviously know that he continued. But, you know, we don't know what they know or what they're thinking or what they might do, meaning law enforcement, moving forward. So we'll just wait to see. But, you know, at least he's been convicted of the murders that he did commit and a lot of the rapes, etc. There's still so much that this man did over time that we'll never be able to prove and never be able to connect, really, unless he left some other DNA somewhere.
So do you have any idea what his last family, the ones he was living with at the time of his arrest, are doing now, how they handle this? Are they standing by him? Did they leave him? Like, what happened to that family?
Well, I don't know any of the specifics, except that they read letters from his family members, a few of them, at the sentencing. And they were, you know, letters to the judge, I'm sure, that they wrote on his behalf, to talk about what a good father and grandfather and so on that he was. So I really don't know. I can't speak to that other than what was said in court that day. So that's one of the aspects of this case that I've kind of not talked about, because family should be over in that corner. And, you know, they have, you know, nothing to do with his behavior. So, but I do know that they had good things to say about him, which seemed kind of interesting to hear during, right in front of the victims of these horrendous crimes that he had committed. They're reading letters about how wonderful he was. So it seemed inappropriate to me in a way, but I understand why they do it. It's part of the process, but it just seemed odd. I know one of his family members wrote a book recently, but I have not read it, trying to shed light on his behaviors or what he might have missed. It was his brother-in-law. So, and they've also were interviewed, I think, on an HBO special, but other than that, I don't really know.
Yeah, well, you'd have to wonder. I mean, of course it's not their fault, but you'd have to wonder if they would... You know, because if we're classifying him as a sociopath or something, we have to wonder if they ever really felt an affection or love, or, you know, from more of a scientific point of view of how, what was their relationship like living with God, not knowing.
You know. Well, you never know. I mean, they must have seen him, you know, talk to himself or be in a rage once in a while, or do something. You know, his wife took his kids and left in 1991. So we don't really know the inside of that unless they share it. But you know, they also had what they believed to be a good relationship in multiple ways from the letters that I heard. But again, the reality is that people like this who do such horrendous things over time, I mean, this is, you know, lots and lots of crimes, they have two sides, well, more than that probably, to their personality where they can pretend to be real people and not really, they just emulate, like Ted Bundy. I mean, they emulate people. They're not really real people. You know what I mean?
Right, right. They learn as a child how to emulate, you know, behaviors and stuff. Yeah.
Correct.
That's,
yeah.
That's pretty interesting. So now, so do you think we're going to learn more from this guy before he dies? Or are they going to bother trying to convict him of anything else, or do you think they're just going to walk away now?
Well, you know, money is part of the concern, funding to investigate. I don't know what they'll do. I'm not privy to that information, and I you know, I'll just wait like everybody. But the thing is that a lot of people have questions, so I'm sure they're going to try to maybe answer some of them. I don't know. That's my hope, but I don't know that. There's a million other cases I'm sure that they could work on to try to solve cold cases, et cetera, all over the state. And that's been my intent, is just to say, hey, you know, there were a lot of murders of women and young girls in the state of California, across the country, but in particular, what I focused on was the state of California, because that's where I'm from. And one of the things I also was asking is, how did a monster like this, how was he allowed to evolve into such a horrible, horrible monster? I mean, he had to start out peeping. He didn't start out killing, likely. So, you know, over time, he wasn't caught in the 70s. He wasn't caught in Exeter or in the east area of Sacramento. He just wasn't caught. And did they know? They knew he was a cop, probably. They knew he had military background, which is not hard to find in California. There's so many military bases. And they were pretty close on what branch he was in, or they were right on. So there's a lot of aspects to the guy that they knew, hey, he's this and this and this. Well, why didn't they catch him? So that was my question, was like, why was somebody like this allowed to continue the way he was? And for me, one of the answers, and most women would say, it's because rape was not seen as such a horrible crime in the 1970s. If the guy moved to a different area to attack, people were like, oh, good, he's gone. Rather than, we need to nail this guy because he's going to become a killer. And they knew that he was a very dangerous guy. I mean, you could feel it in the 70s in Sacramento. You could feel the tension. You could feel the fear. You could feel that he was dangerous. And I was there in Sacramento, too. I was 19.
Yeah. Well, you see, it was a different time. And that's a good point, because people lived differently. They had different ideas of a relationship between a man and a woman as well, even, right?
Yeah.
So it was a different mentality for sure. So, and plus, you know, with no internet, the police departments themselves didn't communicate real well either, did they? They didn't have this great interaction.
Yeah. Right, they didn't. And I get that, you know, I understand that to a certain degree. I really do. You know, they tried to catch him. They really did. They worked really hard on it. But I also know that there were other things at play, the politics involved, the people that came from Exeter to talk to Sacramento in 1977 told them, we think that he's the same guy that Eastbury rapist, sounds a lot like our Visalia ransacker. And Sacramento said, no, we don't think that's true, or go away. And so a year went by, 1978, they come back again, Visalia PD, and they try to tell them again, we think that this is the same guy, we think he killed Professor Snelling, blah, blah, blah. And they, again, are sent away. So in 1979, it gets, you know, cited basically for shoplifting in the area of the attack zone of the Eastbury rapist, and he's a cop. And he's stealing repellent and a hammer. Now, it would seem in this day and age, we would investigate the police officer. But what happened was he goes to he actually had a trial, and he was convicted by jury of shoplifting. And he's basically let go to wander away. He's fired. He loses his job, but nobody does anything about investigating him. Or if they do, we don't know about that. So in 1979, he goes off and he starts murdering in Southern California. So it's sort of like, geez, why was, not only was he lucky, he was also somehow not investigated at that time as someone who could be the guy. So those were a lot of people's questions. Like, well, how did this happen? Why did they not catch him sooner? You know, and that's a really big question.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Yeah. And I'm sure it'll stay on people's mind for a long time.
Oh, yeah.
Now, Now, in this, now you also tie Mr. D'Angelo into the Zodiac killings, and
right.
I know that there's always a lot of controversy over this, and some wow. really nasty things that get said in the online groups.
Yes.
It's strange. But there's a lot of, what we call passion about this. So what are the main elements for you to think that he was?
Well, the main elements were, one was the geography. The very first time I looked at it was about 2014. Because of the geography, I was born in California, Sacramento, and Vallejo and different areas, Napa. My uncle lived out there. But, you know, it's very close. The geography was the main thing. I thought, God, is this the same serial killer? And then I read The Most Dangerous Game, and I thought, I wonder if this is the guy. And I was investigating the East Area Rapist, and I thought, maybe he was younger. And I was also talking to other people at the time, and they thought maybe they were not the right age. So I thought, well, I don't want to waste a lot of time on this. Let me look at who the East Area Rapist is, because I'm from Sacramento and I was there. So I started investigating the East Area Rapist and kind of wandered off in that venue and wrote my books and so on. But what happened was, after the arrest, you can see the similarity in that basically what he did was he said the same things, he did the same things, he tied people up the same way. He really literally did the same things. It's exact, it's identical. And after a while, when you investigate it, you say, well, geez, how many coincidences can there possibly be here? The fact that he was military and just the way that he did everything. So, and then I was talking to another individual. We were looking at different crimes. D'Angelo might have committed different murders, et cetera. And you get really deep into it, and you go back in time, because I figured out he had to have started when he was a teenager, right? Because that's what serial killers a lot of times do. And so you go back in time and looking at newspaper articles and different things. You track him around, and you can see behaviors that are consistent in different geographical locations. You know, so what you find is there were murders, and a lot of people, and I had no idea when I first started looking at it. I don't read the Zodiac books, still haven't. And what I did was look online and started reading the police reports, etc., and just trying to figure out who people saw, what they saw, and what the similarities might be as far as what he could have done. And so eventually what we did was look at, I said, we've got to figure out, I've been talking to somebody else, and we think that he is a Zodiac and or could be. And he's like, oh, really? So we started looking at, I said, we have to figure out a way to connect Zodiac's murder victims to the Golden State Killer. Well, the connection is Paul Stein, because he's the outlier. And we've talked about that before in one of the interviews that I did with you before. Paul Stein was born in Exeter. I guess it's in somebody's book. I've heard that rumor. And I thought, wow, that's an amazing coincidence. Everything sort of leads back to Exeter, California. Paul Stein's family was down there. His brother Joe's wife worked for the Tulare County Courthouse for 65 years. So you start to follow and track that lead, and why would he kill Paul Stein? And after the murder, Joe was all over the media saying, come and get me, Zodiac, you know, like, here's my home address, here's my work address, you know, come at me because I want a piece of you. And I was like, wow, that's amazing, because who in their right mind would do that? So I thought, why did he kill him? He was executed rather than being a couple killer. You know, he killed three couples. Well, he tried to kill three couples. Two men survived. But here he is, couple killing, and that's what the Golden State Killer did also, was kill couples. He tied them up the same way. He did the same things, said the same things. And he basically said, too, that he would continue to kill, and he would just make things look like accidents or whatever. But he also did continue to kill couples. And so there's just so much that's similar. He was able to change his MO to killing with knives, killing with guns, killing, strangle. It didn't matter. He didn't care how he killed. He could just kill. And that's what his goal was. Right. Well, the Zodiac, you know, when he was killing originally, he did it at night, did it with a gun first, and he had just gotten out of the Navy, if he's the same guy. Also, by the way, all of those killings were done during school breaks and when there was no school in session, when D'Angelo was in school. And if he killed them, he could drive home to Auburn or Placer areas where he was going to school easily from Highway 80, just jump on the freeway. So it was not an impossible task, and he was available. I'm trying to remember the first part of your question. Well, I think he was dramatic. I think he probably tried to talk down when he was the East Area Rapist, but he wrote a letter to the media and law enforcement when he was also East Area Rapist. And so I think that he had a flair for the dramatic. And one of the things he did, as a matter of fact, I talked about it in my book, because he talks about different things like the Mikado and different other things. He's just very dramatic, and which is why I think he spoke at the end of the sentencing, because that he knew would be the lasting image of him standing there speaking. But the influences of different movies and things over time, westerns, gangster movies, there was a lot of things that we watched in the 50s and 60s that could have had an influence, and one of those, of course, was the Charlie Chan movie at Treasure Island, where he's in San Francisco. And the guy has a disguise. One of the characters in there has a disguise, and he's Dr. Zodiac. And one of the things, none of it made any impression on me, really, except for the disguise itself. The disguise was so that different people could put it on and no one would know who was in there. Like, you couldn't tell if he was heavy or tall or thin or whatever. And the fact is that the costume was where it actually made people look taller. And so I thought, well, since he's going to commit a crime in the broad daylight at Berryessa, and he uses a knife because it's quiet and there's no gunshots, and he's got a costume where if anybody sees him, they can't even see the color of his eyes because he's sewn in the sunglasses. That might have been where he got that idea and became that persona, because he really did have a flair for the dramatic.
So what is the biggest critic toward that you get? What is the biggest backlash you find yourself getting? Well, you know, without,
besides,
you know,
besides
they're
being
general.
They're the excites for talking.
Oh, well, no. They're crazy. All the JFK, the Zodiac, all these groups.
Yeah.
I sit in them because I just get information. But
yeah.
I tell you, it's all craziness.
Well, the reality is that the biggest concern right off the top, and I knew when I put Zodiac on the cover that it would be controversial, and that's the whole point, is to have a discussion, to go, hey, what about this? What if this really is the same serial killer? Because it really is geographically right down the street. It was so easy for him to cross jurisdictional lines and to do everything he did and change his MO anytime he wanted to. And that's the biggest problem that a lot of the guys that I've talked to have, is they go, there's no way he's not the same killer, because he's not as the Zodiac, he wasn't a sexual predator. And as the Zodiac, he had this MO, and it's just not the same guy. And so I get where they're coming from. I totally understand that. I can appreciate that perspective. But what I also know from studying the Golden State Killer and Joseph DeAngelo is is that he really could change his MO. He really did. And one of the reasons he did that was because he was smart enough to do that. He was had a bachelor's degree in criminal justice. He knew what to do as far as crossing jurisdictional lines. He knew, even when he committed burglaries, how long it would take for cops to show up, 15 minutes to 30. He was never in a hurry. He always just kind of wandered off unless someone was chasing him. He had all day, and he was never worried about it. The same thing with the Zodiac. He drives 20-something miles away, gets in a phone booth, and he calls the police, and he says, I did this. He's not in a hurry. He knows that he's out of that jurisdiction, and he's headed up the freeway out of the area. So a lot of the things that people talk about, well, he can't be the same kind of guy. Well, the reality sexually is that, no, Zodiac didn't rape people that we know of. But as a Visalia ransacker, the Golden State Killer, he wasn't a sexual predator in that way either. What he did was breaking and entering into the house, breaking and entering. It's sort of like rape, right? But what he does is, just like the BTK killer, he talked about how he got high off of breaking into people's houses. So the Visalia ransacker is not a sexual predator. He's just a burglar, cat burglar, very good at it. And then as he hits Easter Egg rapist, he tries to make everybody think he's just a rapist. He's a rapist, and he's all over the place. He's 50 rapes that they know about. There's probably more over jurisdictional lines. So he's just a rapist, so he can continue doing that until he stops. And then he's just the original Night Stalker. The reality is in each one of those components, that's one of the things I talk about in the book, is that there are certain types of burglars, and some of them have sexual components to that. And that's the type of persona that the Easter Egg Rapist Golden State Killer was. He was able to change his MO enough to fool people in different jurisdictions in order to not be caught. And that's what the Zodiac did too. He said, I'm out of here. I'm going to walk away. And he wandered off to a different part of the state, different jurisdiction, and continued to kill and to do whatever he wanted, just like he said.
It's just crazy. So what do you want people to get out of this book? So they take the book home, they read it, and what do you hope they walk away with?
Well, one is the reality of trying to solve more cold cases, a lot of unsolved murders of women and girls that really needed more attention as far as the case against Joseph DeAngelo. He was a horrendous serial killer. But because he was seen as just a rapist, as the East Area rapist, it wasn't seen as important as it is today. And so there are a lot of crimes that were committed by millions of different people in the state of California and across the United States where they were never solved. There are still cold cases to this day. Women, they go missing. They're abused and harmed still to this day. And so that's one of the reasons for this book to sort of say, okay, now he pled guilty. He's going to go to wherever they're going to send him after COVID is over. And what we need to do now is come up with some answers for some of these cold cases where we think it was him, or even if it was someone else, we need to focus on trying to bring answers to more people. And one of the wonderful things is that DNA and genealogy, genetic genealogy, we have those tools to do that, and we need to. Since DeAngelo's arrest and being found by genetic genealogy, they've solved over 93 other crimes, cold case crimes, putting a lot of people away that created havoc back in the 70s and 80s and so on. So we need to continue using that tool and opt in and just kind of keep using the tools that we have and maybe look at doing a better job, you know, when it comes to talking to different jurisdictions and so on.
Well, I tell you, it's quite a case, and it just keeps on going.
Yeah.
Now, do you have a website that people can come if they want to find out about you, or do you have a place you'd like them to go instead?
Well, I have a blog that I have. It's kind of in between all these writing of books the last 5 years, the blog is one of the things I post on. It's AndPen and WordPress. It's and then also I have, if you want to email me questions, andpen13@gmail.com. And also I have a Facebook page, but you have to friend request me. But yeah, I'm out there. Well, you know, when you talk about serial killers, you have to have some way of, you know, having a friend request.
Oh, yeah. Good. Yeah. Yeah, well, you know, you got to check it out, too. You don't just take anybody.
Yeah.
No, I mean, that's good. It's good. It's good to exchange ideas and do all that stuff. And, you know, sorry you get cut off once in a while with the groups, but...
Well, that's okay. Like I said, a lot of people, they have their ideas about who the Zodiac is, and I'm fine. That's good. It's wonderful that everybody has their theory or their, you know, connection, and they really stand behind it, and that's wonderful. I think that discussion is a good thing, and, you know, reading about what we found out about D'Angelo and trying to compare the two is a natural progression. So some people want to talk about it and some people don't, and that's fine. You know, I'm good with that.
Well, the whole idea, I think, of the groups are to talk. And and you, there can't be, you know, unless someone's just doing a lot of swearing and, you know, Hitler did it or something just stupid.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you know, we all are throwing ideas out there. I just... I don't understand the anger. There's a lot of anger in these groups.
Well,
and I don't get it.
Yeah, me neither. People get offended, really, but that's never my intent. My intent is just to say, hey, what about this? And then if it turns out to be somebody else, of course I'm going to say, and just like anybody, show me the proof. Tell me why you think so. And I would love to hear it. I don't care who solves it. Just somebody solve it, please, and tell these poor families who did it. That's pretty much my MO.
Yeah. Well, the bottom line, that's what everybody wants.
Yeah.
And I don't understand the anger. It's the same in the JFK group and the Jack the Ripper. Like, I watched them.
Yeah.
They all go through these eras, but it seems like some of them get really vicious and angry. And
I was surprised by how vicious people on the internet can be. I truly don't understand it. We need to be more kind and patient, I think. But what's interesting too is, what was I going to tell you? I was on Facebook pages with people, and all of a sudden this gentleman named, he called himself Dirt Poor Richard, and he came on to try to show us all and tell us all how he solved the Cypher 340, the unsolvable one that's been sitting there for 50 years. And so I put it in the back of my last book because I wanted people to see it, and he wanted people to see it. He posted it on Facebook. He posted it all these different places. He told the FBI. He told law enforcement. He told the media. And now what we wait for because of COVID is some verification from the law enforcement, FBI, that his solve of the 340 cipher is, in fact, verified and correct. And I just thought I'd share that with you guys today because... he basically is, I said, what do you think they'll do? And he said, I think that he's 100% sure that they'll verify it as correct and solved when they decide to announce it. But this gentleman, he wanted to put it in social media because he said, if I get COVID and die, I want people to know that it was solved. And I said, well, and he solved it by, he's an autistic gentleman. And he solved it with a pencil and paper. So, you don't want to talk about that, you know. But the reality is that's about what he's waiting to hear. I'm just sharing that information.
Yeah.
So that's with him. But I'm waiting to hear from law enforcement or somebody to find out who the Zodiac is, if they can tell us.
Yeah. Well, you know, maybe we'll find out officially. Maybe we won't.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm expecting either one. So, you know, I won't be disappointed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it'll all work out.
Yeah.
But anyway, well, it's been a pleasure having you on the show again. And we'll have your book and I guess your blog site up on ours so people can get it in one click. The book is called End Game of the Most Dangerous Game, Golden State Killer. And our guest has been Ann Penn. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you very much, Alan. I really appreciate your time today. It's always a pleasure.
To find out more about our show, guests, or to listen to past shows from our archive, please go to www.houseofmysteryradio.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Well, good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Well, good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.